We'll have a song to close with. I have an unusual sermon. This will finish with a question, not an application. But I presume the question itself will be an application. But normally I don't finish with questions. So I want to give you a glimpse into my world at the beginning, and we'll lead into other people's worlds as we move along. So I've often chatted to people down through the years at various stages and did an awful lot of pastoral care, both on the one-to-one and in all kinds of settings, and even in the phone in latter years. And some conversations, both face-to-face with Christians, some conversations with yet-to-be Christians, both. Some of them have begun like this. I'm thinking of packing it all in. You're sitting down and you're having coffee with somebody and you're asking, well, how are you? And they begin with this phrase, I'm thinking of packing it all in. You're not expecting that, but that's what's come to you now, and you're trying to figure out, what in the heck do they mean by packing it all in? How do we figure that one out? What do we ask next, right? Because that's a fairly loaded statement, you know. And you may say something like, well, tell me a bit more there, so. And then they go on to the next thing. I'm tired of living. I've had people say to me, face to face, I'm tired of living. The going is so tough, I'm just tired of it. Now you're sitting there, I pack it all in, I'm tired of living. None of that fills you with any assurance whatsoever. You're beginning to say is, how bad is this situation? And it goes on to the next phase, which is, I'd be better off dead. Now you're dealing with somebody now that is in a fairly distressed, hopeless situation, or at least appearing to look hopeless. I'd be better off dead. Whatever has gone wrong, you're trying to figure out what has gone wrong to the stage of where they're saying that. And then they move to one more stage. Do you know something? There are days, not alone waiting to be better off days, there are days, to be truthful with you, I wish I had never been born. I've had people say that to me across the table while we're drinking coffee. I've had people say to me on the phone. So I'm thinking back here all in, I'm tired of living, I'd be better off dead, I wish I had never been born. I know it's a terrible thing to say, they'll say, but I wish I had never been born. What do you say to somebody like that? Either sitting across from you, or they're on the phone, whatever the case may be. Let me give you what most people would say. Not all, hopefully you wouldn't say this, but most people, this is the answer they'd give. You need to go and get help before it's too late. Isn't that the most logical answer you can get? They don't say it, but you know what the unsaid statement is. Why do you think I'm here in front of you? That's exactly why I'm here. And our answer is, you need to go and get help before it's too late. You know, you pass it along, because that in modern language is suicide. This person is suicidal. I can't afford to have anything got to do that will contribute to their death, and I could end up in a heap of trouble. Correct? But now we have one more dilemma. What happens if we do that and they meet this? What happens if there is no help available? Now we have a crisis. They can't get it. They can't access it. They have come to you. In our expertise, you have moved them along so that the pressure wouldn't be on you, and say you need to go to those who can help you, and they get there and there's no help available. What now? That's a dilemma that many people face, and indeed have faced. Indeed, I've had people say to me, You're my last stop. I have already tried the others. Now we're in trouble. So, there's no help available. Then we arrive at an Ecclesiastes verses 1 to 3 situation. I was reading this recently, and it just struck me how close it was to the phone calls that and to the meetings I've had done through the years with people. And in a word, I'll sum up everything in it. We call it people being depressed, suicidal, but I want to use the word that Solomon will use, which is oppression. Oppression. Worse than all the other stuff put together. Solomon is looking out at the people of his day, and he's making comments on life as he sees it. And in this few verses, he's making a comment about a situation like this, about oppression. This is what he has to say. Again, I looked and I saw all the oppression that was taking place under the sun. I saw the tears of the oppressed, and they had no comforter. Power was on the side of the oppressors, and they had no comforter. I declared that the dead, who already are dead, are happier than the living, who are still alive. But better than both is he who has not yet been, who has not seen the evil that is done under the sun. Solomon looked out in his world thousands of years ago and saw the very same thing that we can almost say is here today. We may use different phrases, but pretty much it's the same thing. Oppression. What did you see, Solomon? We'll ask him just two questions for the sake of clarity. When you looked out and you observed the situation. Now, Solomon was an extremely wealthy, powerful man himself. But what do you see, Solomon? And this is what he says. He says, again, I see that many people are treated badly. Now, how relevant is that? I see their tears, and I see there was no one to comfort them. Pretty relevant today, even still. I saw that cruel people had all the power, and I saw there was no one to comfort the people they hurt. There you have oppression. People in a powerful situation, putting the squeeze, as we would say today, on people beneath them, or people they had control over, and oppressed them, and they had nowhere to go, and they had no one to turn to. That is what Solomon is describing. That's what do you see, Solomon? What are your conclusions? Solomon was an incredibly wise man. Here they are. Number one is this. I decided that it is better for those who have died than for those who are still alive. Remember I said? Better off dead than being alive. This is what Solomon is saying. The thing is so bad. In many ways, death would be a release to them. So I concluded that the dead are better off than the living. To get to that stage is serious, serious oppression and serious despair. But many people arrived there. Many, and they're there today. And it's even better for those who died at birth because they never saw the evil that is done in this world. Not a cheerful message, I'll grant you that, but incredibly realistic. All because powerful people who are ruthless and cruel oppress others, and they do it in such a way it's almost impossible for the people to get to rise from above them and to defeat him because they're in the position of power. This is what Solomon is describing. What hope does Solomon offer us in those three verses? We've just looked at them. The answer is none. No, he'll come up with answers eventually, but right here as he's looking at the situation, it looks utterly hopeless, and that there's no way out for these people. The only release they can get is death. Only the Lord knows how many people are like that this morning, in various stages of oppression. There can be physical oppression, there can be mental oppression, there can be emotional, there can be national, there can also be spiritual oppression. It can go right across. What Solomon is describing here is the whole package. Everything is involved in it. It's physical, it's mental, it's emotional, and there doesn't seem to be any help coming spiritual. So what's his conclusion? They'd be better off dead. Or even better again, they'd be better off not being born or just die at childbirth. Why did he come to that conclusion? And I back you up a verse to chapter 3, verse 17. He says this: the reason why they'd be better off dead is, I put it up this way, he says, there's something else I saw on the earth where people should be treated right and they're treated wrong, where people should be treated fairly and they are treated unfairly. Does that describe the situation of people who are oppressed? They should be treated right, but they're not. They're treated wrong. They should be treated fairly, but they're not. Because that could cost those who are in power or who are oppressing them. And so therefore, they're treated unfairly. That's the NIV Reader's Version. They're taking a bit of liberty, is it right? The New Living Standard. Is it New Living Standard? I don't know which one. I think it's called the Voice says it this way. Again, the very same verse. It says, again, the teacher, again, I looked at everything that goes on under the sun, and I realized that in the place of justice, wickedness prevails. In the place of righteousness, wrongdoing succeeds. So wherever they go, looking to relieve the oppression, they are met with unfairness or injustice. So where do you go then? No, Solomon saw that. And justice was denied. There was a tremendous amount of wickedness and fairness and all that was gone out the window. The New Living Translation puts it this way, that the courts were corrupt. There was no justice. Where do you go then? There is nowhere to go, is there? So I'm thinking of packing the whole lot in. Doesn't sound good. You're trying to figure out a way of encouraging them. Or, I'm tired of living. You're trying to figure out a way of helping them see a different perspective or a brighter side. But there isn't, you see, it's the problem. The reality is that there isn't. I'd be better off dead. No one is going to say yes to that. Unless some fella is terminally ill and he's in a heap of pain. But the way they're feeling, the way life has turned out for them, death at this stage would be the release. And that's why many people go that route, to be honest with you. And I wish I had never been born. I have had all of those things said to me. If you were sitting in my chair across the table and that was being said to you, what would you say? How would you respond? You've sent them for help, they're back to you, there's no help there. I said, I'll send you up there. I said, no, I have been there, this is why I'm back to you. What do you do now? They asked one more question. And this question would be asked of me, and it was always asked last. Never first. Remember I said, I'd finished off with a question. And this is the question that I would be asked. Can your Jesus help me with that? Some question to be asked. You have to be careful how you answer it, because in many situations, it's their last hope. Would you be certain that Jesus is going to help them? That he would do something that nobody else would be able to do? And he'd do it for them. There's no question, you can answer the question, of course Jesus can help you. Of course you can answer that question very easy. It would fall off of our lips. But they're asking in a position and in a place of utter despair and hopelessness. And if something doesn't happen in this realm, they're going to die. It's only a question of time. When I've been asked that question, sometimes I would say to them, I will ask him and come back to me. I will ask him and come back to me. Occasionally I'll say, yes, he can help you, and here's why I think he can. But that'd be based on, depending which way they've come, and I may have, you know, they may have been helped, gone a certain way, and we'd have a route for them that you'd know is going to work, or there's going to be help available. But sometimes there isn't, that I would be aware of. And I'd go out and say, Lord, are you going to help this person? And if you are, what does that actually look like? So that there is a glimmer of hope in the midst of great despair. That's pressure. Mentally, spiritually, and emotionally for them. And to be honest with you, there's a certain amount of pressure on me as well. The only times I've really got myself into trouble with all of this is when I try to pass them up along and not help them. It's the only time I've got myself into trouble. If they're knocking at this door, they're knocking at the door of Jesus. And I say to them, if Jesus doesn't help us, we're all snookered. And then back to him and say, Lord, what does help look like in this situation? Oppression is a terrible thing. And it comes in all, we can understand oppressive regimes, and we talk about, you know, the unfairness and unjust society and just how people are oppressed and how they're put down and all this. But, and that's one side, but there's other stuff that's happening right under our noses of where people go and you think you're going to get help, it only makes the situation worse because there is no help there. They need something that is bigger than all of it so they can at least get some hope. And they need to know that either the person like me, God between us and our arms, or they themselves can access this. They're desperate for it. That is what the Lord has given me to give to you. You're standing in front of somebody. Can you say with some measure of faith, can your Jesus help me with that? They can be Christian, non-Christian. I've got it from both. Lord, help us to help people with the help that is only available from you. Lord, much of what I have to offer is no use to them unless it is of you and from you. But Lord, let us come before you, and we meet broken, hurting, despairing people, that we have confidence in our spirits and confidence in the Word of God and confidence in what we know about Jesus and have experienced to this date, that something will change, that their cry will not fall on deaf ears, and we will have something that is of you, Jesus, to give to them. This we ask in your name. Amen.